It's almost kākāpō breeding season. I saw some photos on Twitter that I couldn't resist catching up with conservation biologist Dr. Andrew Digby, who's just returned from Whenua Hou, which is the island a lot of these kākāpō hang out on. He joins me now. Hello there, Andrew.
Kia ora, Jesse. How are you?
Yeah, good. I said this earlier. You've got a bit of an international following for your Twitter account, don't you? They're a real charismatic bird that seem to get people pretty excited.
Yeah, the kākāpō do. We get a lot of attention from around the world for kākāpō, which is cool, and kind of spread the word. And yeah, we get people from Europe and States and Japan and all over the place supporting their cause. So that's really good for us.
Whenua Hou, formerly known as Codfish Island, has how many kākāpō on it?
There's 75 kākāpō there at the moment, so that's one of two of our main breeding islands. The other one is Anka or Pukenui, which is in Dusky Sand, which is down in the southwest tip of the Auckland.
Okay, and what were you doing over there for a week?
We were checking up on a few birds. We've had a few birds in hospital recently, and so we released those back on the island last Friday, and so keeping an eye on those and doing a few health checks for other birds as well. So, yeah, just a general sort of check-up trip. Ahead of starting into the breeding season, which will kind of kick off in earnest in the next few weeks.
So what did you find over there? How are they doing?
Yep, they're doing okay. We released the birds that came back from hospital. They're doing okay. Checked up on some other birds. They're all doing good. The birds are all looking in reasonable condition. And we start to feed them next month, so we start to get them ready in optimal breeding condition, ready for the start of next year.
You helped them along a bit.
Yeah, we do. We found that they sometimes need a little bit of help with the food. So if they're in better weight condition, they're more likely to breed. But we actually end up not making them too heavy. We found if the females get too heavy, they have too many male chicks, which is a problem. We don't want too many male chicks. So the females go on a bit of a diet. We try to keep them within a weight range of around about 1.5 to 2 kilos.
But in general, a full kākāpō is a frisky kākāpō.
Reasonably, yeah. The males, kind of, we let them eat as much as possible. They lose a lot of weight over the breeding season because they're basically sitting there booming at their bowls all night. So, yeah, we feed them up as much as we can, within reason.
Can you tell us about a few of your favourites? We saw a nice picture of Bunker on Twitter.
Yeah, Bunker's a really nice, calm bird. He came back to the island last Friday after a bit of time in Auckland Zoo for treatment for the dreaded crusty bum or cloacitis, which is a disease that's been knocking around in kākāpō for quite a long while, but has sort of reared its head again over the last 18 months. That's causing us a bit of an issue. He's a great bird. We've got one of my favourites is always Sinbad. Sinbad is a bird who's kind of semi-imprinted on humans. He's a completely wild kākāpō, but he kind of behaves a little bit differently around humans, and he's a really genetically really important bird as well. He's a bit of a favourite.
Hey, speaking of genetics, I saw an interesting study recently that we tend to think of small populations of one species as being a bit problematic genetically, that they will keep on replicating the genetic mutations and faults, and that won't be very good for the population. But there was a bit of a surprise about kākāpō. Did you come across that research?
Yeah, so that's something which has sort of arisen out of some of the genome work that we've been doing for kākāpō, building up this big bank of genome data. And it showed that there may be some, we previously thought that the kākāpō, which originated from Rakiura, were genetically sort of less distinct, less diverse, and might have more of these deleterious effects, these sort of bad genes, which can cause some of these issues that we see in kākāpō. But it may be possible that some of these genes actually kind of get wiped out or cancelled out after enough time. So it's a kind of an unusual result. It's a surprising one, but it's something that we'll be looking at over the next few years as we try and work out a strategy for what to do with our kākāpō population. We have these two main sources of kākāpō, and most of them came from Rakiura, from Stewart Island, and then we have a lineage which came from Fiordland. And so it's kind of working out genetically what to do with those birds. But yeah, there's quite a long way to go before we make any changes to our management as a result of these sort of things.
We've got a bit of time, Andrew. Can you tell us a bit about breeding season and how you can help?
Yeah, so the breeding season is a big deal. So I guess number one is kākāpō breeding seasons don't happen every year. They only happen every round about 2 to 4 years. The last time we had one was in 2019, and that was a real doozy. It's a real big one for us. It's the biggest one that we've ever had, and we fledged about 74 chicks from that. So it's a big deal when it happens, and every time there's a kākāpō nest, it kind of gets our full attention. So we make sure that we have all the monitoring systems in place. We have people on standby to intervene if anything goes wrong. This year, it's kind of a little bit different. We're relying on our technology a little bit more. So that's quite key for us. As we go forward in time, we need to be a little bit less intensive with kakapo. Now, kakapo are probably one of the most intensively managed species in the world, and we can't do that forever. We need to get a little bit smarter and a little bit more hands-off. And this year, it's quite exciting for our team. We've got a new breeding island. So that's Pukekohe or Chalky Island, which is down in Chalky, and again, down in the far south of Fiordland. And we're treating that as a more of a hands-off island, a little bit lighter management touch than we've had in the past on our other islands. So that's kind of looking towards the future a little bit. How will we manage kakapo in the future when we hopefully have, larger populations in more remote places around the country?
See how they get on without you.
Yeah, basically, yeah, we've got to cut the strings at some point, and it's a gradual process. And each time we have a breeding season, we pull back a little bit more, and we're doing that on some of our other islands as well, just being a little bit more hands off. And there's a danger to that. There's a likelihood that we will lose more chicks, but in the long term, in the big picture, that's kind of the thing that we have to do. We don't like managing kakapo so intensively. It's not a natural state. Would they need it because they're on the verge of extinction? But over time, as the population grows, we need to step back a little bit more and let them do their own thing.
Last breeding season, how many chicks were born and how many survived?
We had a lot of eggs. We had 252 eggs. We had 86 chicks hatch. We ended up with about 74 fledging, and we have lost a few of those. So we went to a high of population of 213 towards the end of 2019, and that's down to 201 now. So we've lost a few, and that's kind of normal. We normally lose a few juveniles over the first few years of their life, but yeah, we're kind of hoping it won't dip below 200 before we start going up again, just sort of round about January, February next year.
Do you know what goes wrong and why with the kakapo chick?
Yeah, well, with the chicks, they're quite vulnerable in the first few weeks, especially 2 to 3 weeks of age. They get quite a few issues. Once they fledge, it kind of can be accidents. We've lost a couple of to accidents so far this year, and it's kind of something you don't normally think about of wild animals having accidents, but they do just like we do. And we had one bird got impaled on a branch as it fell, and another one got stuck. That's the sort of thing that we keep a close eye on them over the first few months after they leave the nest,
Jeez.
because we know they're vulnerable, but some of these happened a little bit later than that. So it's just natural causes, that sort of thing.
They're quite big birds. I believe they're the world's most voluminous parrots. What are their predators? Are rats and stoats big enough to give them trouble?
Stoats are big enough to give them trouble, certainly. Rats are big enough to eat the chicks and the eggs, so they wouldn't be able to breed very well in the presence of rats. But yeah, cats and stoats historically, and dogs too, would have also had a big impact, as well as us obviously eating them and clearing a lot of their habitat. So yeah, that's kind of one of the big challenges for us now is new sites for kakapo. And after this next breeding season, hopefully next year we'll have quite a few more kakapo chicks, and we're working on the next issue is, where to put them all, which is quite a cool problem to have. But it also, ties in with a lot of the predator-free New Zealand work that's going on of trying to find sites where we can actually put kakapo where they'll be safe.
What's your view of how the predator-free movement is going?
I think it's great. I think one of the really key things is that it's got people talking and people doing stuff in their backyard. It's a real sort of, grassroots campaign in a lot of ways. And I think that's brilliant that people are realizing that, this is one of the major problems that we have in New Zealand. And the more work I do in conservation on different species, the more you realize that's the number one problem that we've got to solve. If we can solve that, then we've gone a long way towards solving quite a lot of our problems for many of our species.
In the meantime, I know you have an interest in Takahi as well. How are they going?
Yeah, they're doing well. Yep. So they're over sort of 450. We've just had our first eggs of the breeding season just come up. We've discovered over the last few days. So yep, that's kicking off to a breeding season. So they breed every year, but it's still an important event when they do. And yeah, we're looking to try and hopefully have better success at Kahurangi. So that's the new population which we established in 2018. Plus, also we're kind of pumping birds out of our Takahi farm near Te Anau. That's a real engine room for the species.
What's one thing New Zealanders can do to support these beautiful birds?
I kind of think just spreading the word, just kind of yeah, just making sure that people know about them, and they're just two species, but they are important ones, and they're kind of symbolic, I think, of some of the issues that a lot of New Zealand species face. You know, the threats to kākāpō, the threats to takahea, the same sort of threats that a lot of species are confronted with. So yeah, just kind of spreading the word and trying to get, you know, letting people know about these species, because we do find that once people know about them, they kind of fall in love with them. And once you fall in love with something like that, then you kind of want to protect it. So yeah, that's the path I would like people to take.
Good stuff. Really nice to talk to you today. Thanks very much, and we'll look forward to hearing about the success of this breeding season.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for your time. And yeah, you can keep up to date with all our programs on social media. So yeah, if people can follow along, that'd be great.